Thanks for listening to this podcast. I'm Bob Kinzel, co-host of Vermont Edition. Just wanted to let you know that this has been edited for brevity.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Mitch Wertlieb in for Jane Lindholm. The F-35 represents one of the most sophisticated weapons systems in U.S. history. It is also the most expensive. Each jet costs around $89 million, but there is a lot of bang for that buck. The F-35 combines stealth technology with supersonic speed and replaces the F-16 fighter jets that were flown for decades by pilots of the Vermont Air National Guard. As we'll hear in a moment, the F-35 operates in ways the F-16 can't, and it represents a major upgrade in aviation defense. But ever since the decision by the Air Force to base the F-35s in Vermont was announced back in 2013, there's been often a lot of loud opposition from people living near the airport where the jets will be based. And that loud opposition has a lot to do with loudness itself. The F-35s are, by all accounts, going to produce more noise than the F-16s that preceded them. And there are other concerns from opponents as well. We've got several guests joining us today to talk about the F-35. We want to hear your thoughts as well. Are you welcoming these jets with open arms, or do you feel they bring too much noise pollution to densely packed residential neighborhoods nearby? Is it appropriate to have such an advanced weapons program based at an airport in a small city? Or do you feel it's the next logical step for the Vermont Guard to host and fly these jets after years of experience commandeering the F-16s? And we're going to start by speaking with a Vermont Air Guard pilot who's already had a chance to fly one of the F-35s. Lieutenant Colonel Nathan Graber, known as Wiz among his fellow pilots, joins us now on the line. Lieutenant Colonel Graber, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Thank you, Mitch. Good afternoon, and thanks for this opportunity to speak with you.
Absolutely. You flew one of these jets from Fort Worth, Texas, to the Burlington International Airport. Tell us a little bit about that flight. For example, was the jet on autopilot for much of the time, or were you guiding the flight path manually for most of it?
Sure. Yeah, we do use a fair amount of autopilot. It's one of the strengths of this airplane. We took off out of Fort Worth for a three-hour flight under some kind of uncharacteristically cloudy skies there in Texas, but about an hour into the flight, we rejoined with an air refueling tanker for about a 15-minute process where we topped off with gas en route back up to Burlington. So that part is definitely hand-flown, as we say, no autopilot while we're getting gas from another airplane in the sky. But then, made our way back here northeast and returned to a cloudless sky in Burlington. It was just a picture-perfect afternoon.
Total time of that trip?
Just over 3 hours before we got back here to Burlington.
A lot of people love to fly that fast. How did it feel as you approached and then got into Vermont airspace, approaching the airport in Burlington for the first time in one of these jets?
Just a truly amazing feeling. I mentioned to my flight leader, Airborne, when we were just about to beam Syracuse there, and that's kind of where our training airspace lies, is out in that area as well. You know, Adirondacks are coming into view. Lake Champlain is coming into view. And then the Green Mountains, and it's just this anticipation, this last 10 years that we've been working towards to bed down the F-35 here locally, and then now to kind of be back at your home airport and knowing that the supporters are down there on the ground cheering you on. It was a great responsibility at the same time, and we were just having a great time with the arrival.
Well, how would you compare the F-35s to the F-16s, which you've flown, of course? I mean, what are the most significant upgrades that we're talking about here?
So the airplane itself flies extremely similarly to the F-16, just in its kind of handling qualities. There are a few things when you get into kind of the more technical aspects, like how we dogfight with the airplane, or the F-35 has some unique capabilities. It can kind of pull what we call more alpha, which is more AOA. Means we can point with the nose a little bit better than we could in the F-35. But the real strength of the F-35 comes with its stealth capabilities, so that you are able to evade enemy radars, and then kind of couple that with a 1-2 punch that our radar can see enemy airplanes and enemy surface-to-air missile systems at a much greater range than you ever could in the F-35, and that's where the real tactical competency comes in with the F-35.
One of the things that I was surprised to hear about, and correct me if I'm wrong, the F-16s, you could have more than one pilot in those planes, right? But not with the F-35, just one pilot in there?
That's true. You know, the F-35 is a fifth-generation fighter, and along with these fifth-generation advancements have become simulators that are extremely realistic. So the F-35 is all single-seat cockpits. We do most of our training on the ground. in these high fidelity simulators, about 15 to 20 simulators before we actually step into the actual airplane. So, I mean, we're well trained prior to that first flight, but there's always a little bit of anxiety when you're stepping into the unknown there. Sure. With the first time by yourself in the airplane.
Well, that does raise the question. I mean, room for just one pilot. What if something happens to you during a flight?
Well, I guess that is a consideration. I mean, the F-16 primarily was a single-seat fighter. We only used it on rare occasions. And in fact, just one of our aircraft out of our fleet at the time was a two-seater. So, I mean, the vast majority of the time, we were flying a single-seat fighter. But, you know, as part of the non-standard training that we go through, one of our focus areas is kind of if we do feel any symptoms that might come along with some kind of physiological problem that's happening in the airplane, and we're well trained to deal with those things as soon as we see the onset of any symptoms that might come along with that.
Is it okay if I ask you, Lieutenant Colonel Graber, about the mission of the F-35? Obviously, I don't want you to give away any secrets here, but can you sort of just generally describe, you know, what the mission is for these planes and the folks who are flying them?
Sure. Well, there again, there's a fair amount of overlap between what the F-16 did and what the F-35 will do. The main new mission we're taking on is something called SEED, which is an acronym that stands for Suppression of Enemy Air Defenses. And that's going out and taking out enemy surface-to-air missiles. So it's a pretty big threat if you look at kind of our near-peer adversaries, if you're talking about a Russia or a China defense system. And it's something where the F-16 just it couldn't really go into those networks anymore and survive. They're just such advanced SAMs out there these days. So the F-35 is able to use its stealth capabilities. A lot of the mission systems that are in the F-35 help us find those SAMs on the ground, which are mobile, and go in there and take them out and kind of open the battlefield for other aircraft to come in behind us.
Lieutenant Colonel Graber, while I have you on the line here, I want to take a call from Brattleboro. T is on the line with us from Brattleboro. Hi, T. Do you have a question for Lieutenant Colonel Graber?
Hey, nice to chat with you all, and I hope you have a safe flight. But, you know, we have numerous concerns, both from the Project on Government Oversight. And part of the recent evaluation is 80% of the time that the F-35 actually could not fly. It was consistently rated as non-operational, and both Pentagon reports have severely questioned this plane that is between $150 and $200 million. And if it is being fueled in hot weather, it can't be fueled. And in fact, what you need is special environments so that this plane can be fueled. And so one of the consistent problems has been both cited by Project on Government Oversight and by the Pentagon is this plane repeatedly has failed in terms of its ability to consistently reliably fly.
Okay, T, I want to let Lieutenant Colonel Graber answer these concerns right now. Lieutenant Colonel, what about those concerns that T has expressed here?
Well, it's a good question. I don't know all the specifics about the fuel issue, which the caller mentioned, but what I can say is that as these planes have advanced and the ones that we're getting off the line, like the ones we just picked up in Fort Worth, are the most reliable and the most up-to-date, if you will, versions that are of the F-35 that are out there. There have been concerns in the past with the reliability rates. Without question, but the reliability rates are on the rise. And what we're seeing anecdotally from kind of our sister squadron out in Utah is that they're flying at a 80% or 90% mission capable rate, which is kind of the rate we use to say, hey, is this aircraft good from a mission systems point of view? Are we able to go out and get valid training every day? And we are. So I think a lot of those previous issues have been rectified, and I can't speak to the specific one about the fuel. We feel very comfortable that we're getting a good product off the line right now and that we'll be able to fly and train with it and maintain the readiness and proficiency that we need to here in the Vermont Air Guard.
I've got a question for you about the maintenance of these planes, Lieutenant Colonel. Can they be done here, or how much will we need to take place in places like Texas or elsewhere?
Sure. Most of the maintenance will be done here. We have right now over 80 maintenance technicians that are already trained on the F-35 that have either been working on the airplane for 2 or 3 years already, some for a couple months over the summer, getting a lot of in-depth exposure. Those are our technical experts right now. We're also in the process of training up about another 150 maintenance technicians here on base. So we have a very well-diversified and well-trained maintenance cadre. But there are some things where we'll send parts off to get repaired at other depot locations. But the primary maintenance is still done here locally on the F-35.
Lieutenant Graber, I know that, you know, your mission is to fly these planes. I know you don't want to get into political discussions and that sort of thing, but you are aware that there is controversy over these jets coming here. And, you know, there is a hefty price tag, for example. And what would you say if you were trying to convince somebody that, you know what, yeah, there's going to be more of a burden to taxpayers here, but you should embrace the cost because?
Well, I would say I do know that the price tag is hard to swallow for many, and I do understand that. The price tag is worth it because without the technology that comes along with the F-35, our national defense just doesn't we can't carry the same policy that we have right now, where we are able to kind of be a deterrent for bad actors out in the world right now, because they know that the F-16 is not a survivable airplane against some of these surface-to-air missile systems, and you can't just create that technology for free. So, I do sympathize about the price tag with some of your listeners, but it just has to be paid to be able to provide for the national defense in the way we need to.
That is Lieutenant Colonel Nathan Wiz Graber of the Vermont Air National Guard. Thank you so much for taking the time today. Really appreciate it.
You bet, Mitch. Have a great afternoon.
All right. Bye-bye. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Mitch Wertleben for Jane Lindholm. We are talking about the newly arrived F-35 fighter jets now at the Burlington International Airport, with more to come soon. 20 of the jets are expected to be housed at the airport by June of next year. And joining me now on the line from Madison, Wisconsin, is retired Air Force Colonel Roseanne Greco, a vocal opponent of the F-35, who was arrested recently while protesting the basing of these jets at the office of Senator Patrick Leahy. That's where she was arrested, not where the jets will be based, just to be clear. Roseanne Greco, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Oh, thank you for inviting me, Mitch.
Now, if you had to sum up your chief objection to having these jets based in Burlington, what would it be?
My gosh, there are so many ethical and moral issues around the F-35 itself as a weapon of mass destruction, the moral implications of what it does to human beings, Vermonters on the ground, and then the ethical and moral issues surrounding the corrupt basing process. I don't know which one I would pick. I guess I'm going to pick the people. So for me, the crucial issue here is what this aircraft does to human beings on the ground, in this case, Vermonters, and disproportionately Vermonters of color and Vermonters with low incomes. I heard the Lieutenant Colonel talk about how wonderful this plane will be at destroying targets. He referred to them as SAM, surface-to-air missiles. There are people around there, too. And then he talked about it possibly going into Russia and China. You got to think for a second what the implications for that would be for a stealth aircraft to go into the airspace of a country that has nuclear weapons like Russia and China. But let's set that aside for a minute, but that has huge implications for the consequences of that. And that means all-out war, possibly nuclear war, because the F-35, as some of your listeners may know, has been designated by the Pentagon as the newest nuclear weapon delivery vehicle in our nuclear triad. So let's set that aside, because this is an offensive weapon system. It cannot defend the United States against any incoming threats. So it is not a defensive weapon system. It's an offensive weapon system.
You're saying this plane, I'm sorry to cut you off there.
I just want
to ask a question about that. I mean, I'm a little confused. Yeah. You're saying that if the United States was attacked, these planes would not be able to work in a defensive capacity to shoot down another aircraft?
When you think about how we could be attacked, our biggest threat right now is terrorism and cyber security. The F-35 has no capability of countering a terrorist attack on our country. much less a cyber attack on our country, which has huge implications. That's the number one threat that we face from foreign entities. It has no capability to address the real threats to our country. But going back to what its impact is on Vermonters is where I think the moral implications come. We have a senator, Senator Leahy, who pressured, forced, coerced the Air Force to base the F-35 in Burlington. We have records to say that. And I just found out, because I'm here in Madison, Wisconsin, with the great people here who are fighting against the moral injustice of the F-35 coming to their region, but just found out Senator Leahy is working with their senator to put out the same kind of misinformation, disinformation, to confuse the public about the F-35 basing. So there are huge corruption, ethical issues with the F-35 basing process. But the key one is what it will do to the human beings on the ground in Vermont. And that has not only economic, they are, of course, important, but it has health and safety issues, especially to children.
We are going to get into some of those. I want to ask you this. No, it's quite all right. I can tell that your passion on this subject is genuine. What strikes me is that if somebody was hearing your voice now, Roseanne Greco, and did not know who you are, what you've done, they would probably assume that, you know, you are an activist, a protester, but you served in the Air Force. And I wonder if you have heard criticism from other people in the military, either currently serving or retired like yourself, who say, hey, you know, you're betraying your military background and your service by opposing these jets. I mean, why are you doing this?
Yeah, I've heard a little bit of other military members criticizing me for taking a stand against a weapon of mass destruction. When I served 29 years, 4 months, and 4 days in the United States Air Force on active duty, and I was an intelligence officer and specialized in nuclear weapons and nuclear weapon targeting. I took an oath to defend the Constitution. I obeyed my superior officers. I never took an oath to a weapon system. But I also was taught in the Air Force that the number one criteria for military officers and enlisted people in the Air Force was integrity. And integrity means telling the truth, even though it may be uncomfortable, and it may be going against what Lockheed Martin and the huge defense industry wants. But the truth about this weapon system is what I learned from the Air Force in their environmental impact statement. All I was doing for the last 8 years and have been doing is trying to relay what the Air Force is saying this weapon system will do to Vermonters. So I believe that is what the Air Force taught me to do. To be an ethical human being, put service before self, and do excellence in all we do. Those are the three criteria. And my sense of moral justice has been what has propelled me. And I see that as not only a right, but an obligation for any moral person with ethics to speak the truth.
As we mentioned, you were arrested recently protesting about these jets at Senator Leahy's office, and I have to imagine that you have reached out to Vermont's congressional delegation before that kind of protest. Have you had any kind of audience with any of them?
For 8 years, we have been asking, calling, emailing, writing, even when I was the chair of the South Burlington City Council, asking for a meeting with the senators. We never had it. For 8 years, they have refused to meet with any of the individuals who are opposed to the F-35 basing. I do not know if they met with the guard individuals or the big business corporations that are for it, but they never once met with us, which is why we went to Senator Leahy's office to wait to meet with him and have him sign what we thought was a reasonable set of criteria. So that's what we did. We just went to wait some more. We've been waiting for 8 years. We'll wait. And that's what we did in his office until they arrested us.
The other argument that proponents of these jets make is that it is very good economically for the Vermont Guard and for Vermont in general. What about jobs and the effect that these plans will have there?
Okay, well, that's a really good question, because if someone's reason for supporting the F-35 is jobs, then you really don't want the F-35, because as the Lieutenant Colonel just said, some of the maintenance is being done elsewhere, which means some of our maintainers may be out of a job. If you really wanted a weapon that would provide more jobs, then you don't want a fighter aircraft. I mean, we've made the case many times that if you wanted jobs, then get a cargo aircraft, especially one that has a medical mission. You could double, triple, quadruple the number of jobs at the Air Guard by getting another aircraft. So the jobs argument is specious. I mean, the Air Force clearly said the F-35 does not bring any new jobs and has no impact, negative or positive, on the economy. So the jobs argument has always been a myth from way on, and all you have to do is read what the Air Force said about the F-35 not contributing at all to the to any more jobs or benefiting the economy.
And briefly, Roseanne Greco, about 30 seconds we have left here. The decision has been made. Two of these planes were already here, 20 more expected by next year. I mean, is the horse out of the barn at this point, or do opponents of the F-35 have any hope to stop them at this point?
They absolutely do, because we have information from places around the country, four or five different places, that have reversed military basing decisions. And so if other states can do it, we can too. It was done by grassroots people just like ourselves. It was done by senators who cared for their people more than the planes, and it was done through lawsuits. So, yes, it's been done other places in the United States. Certainly Vermonters can do it as well, as I know other states will probably try to do that as well, including the folks here in Madison, Wisconsin.
Roseanne Greco is a retired Air Force colonel from Vermont. Thank you so much for the time today. Appreciate it.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Let's turn now to Jasper Craven. He is an investigative reporter with VT Digger. And Jasper, welcome back to Vermont Edition.
Thanks so much, Mitch.
You reviewed data on the use of afterburners at other F-35 bases. And first, you have the fun assignment of explaining to us briefly what is an afterburner.
An afterburner is essentially a mechanism that injects fuel into an afterburner jet to increase thrust. So the sort of glowing blue lighter flame at the tail end of the plane essentially gets a boost once the afterburner is activated. And with that additional fuel injection comes a lot more noise.
A lot more noise. Okay. So what did you find from afterburner use at these other locales? How does it differ from what was originally predicted for afterburner use at those locations?
Well, ever since the F-35 debate began in Vermont, it's essentially centered around noise and how much of it would be coming with these new planes. And for years, the Air Force and the Vermont National Guard has contended that afterburner use would be very insignificant, around 5% of the time. They pointed to the plane being lighter, and that, you know, with Vermont, generally there would be a partial fuel load, which wouldn't require as much energy to get off the ground. But based on documents, we obtained a digger and an interview with a senior Pentagon official. It seems now that the Air Force, at least at some of their F-35 bases, is rejiggering those estimations. It appears that at least in some environmental impact reviews moving forward, afterburner use will be calculated up to 50% of the time. Unfortunately, the documents we obtained didn't lay out exactly what conditions would merit that increased use, and questions we submitted to the National Guard and the Air Force were not answered. But what seems clear is that the planes already are taking off in afterburner at least three bases across the country, and that moving forward there may be sort of a better, more accurate understanding of an increased afterburner use with the F-35.
I want to ask you about something that I touched on briefly with Roseanne Greco, and that's about Vermont's politicians and the F-35s. It seems that no matter where somebody is on the ideological spectrum here or what party they represent, there's been very little pushback against basing the F-35s here. Perhaps Lieutenant Governor David Zuckerman might be one of those exceptions. But why has there been so little pushback from Vermont politicians on this project?
It's a great question, and it's one that's quite hard to answer when the politicians themselves or their staffers won't engage on the issue. So I'm sort of, you know, fumbling around in the dark on this to some degree. I think one thing that's influenced this is the economic sort of precarity in Vermont. A staffer for Senator Sanders recently pointed out to me that the Plattsburgh Air Force Base closed, I believe, in the early 90s, which had a significant impact on, negative impact on the region. And so, you know, as the delegation and other leaders look at large companies in the state that have either closed their doors or reduced their footprint, I think there's perhaps a greater reliance on the economic benefits at the Guard. I mean, Roseanne Greco is right in that the Air Force did not substantiate any major economic boost from these planes coming. I mean, there's certainly been a lot of construction over there, which is an impact, not exactly sure how large, but, you know, the idea of the Air Guard shuttering is a scary prospect to people in Chittenden County, even though that's highly unlikely it would happen.
Well, Bernie Sanders, who you mentioned, I mean, he has been vocally anti-war throughout his political career. He's leery of military spending in many of his speeches, his policy statements, but he's been on board with this F-35. He is not. Has he talked to you about this at all when you've tried to contact him on it?
The senator himself has not spoken to me, but, you know, staff, I think, again, point to the economic picture. I mean, if you think about military jobs, they contain some cornerstone benefits that Bernie has long fought for. The Department of Veterans Affairs, for instance, offers universal health care to veterans, and the GI Bill offers free college tuition for folks who serve in the military. So I think there's sort of a begrudging respect for the benefits of a good military job. I think that might be part of why Bernie has long supported the Guard. You know, there's also, I think, just frankly, the military does hold a lot of sway in the state. While Bernie, you know, has railed against the Pentagon budget consistently over many decades, he has actually fought for the National Guard to get an increased budget in recent years. And so, you know, when it comes to these jobs inside the Green Mountains, I think he's very protective of them and doesn't want to see them move somewhere else.
And Senator Leahy, I guess, has really been the most the biggest driving force behind this. I guess you would probably say that that would be the same philosophy that he would take in his office.
Absolutely. But, you know, I think with this, with Senator Leahy, there's also just a deep reverence for the history of the Green Mountain Boys. I mean, you know, there is a statue of Ethan Allen sitting on the steps of Vermont's Capitol. And he really likes the sort of distinguishment that comes along with this unit and with the planes coming. Senator Leahy's office was engaged deeply from the very beginning, getting, you know, into the nitty gritty of sound software, for instance. I mean, they were very involved in how the modeling worked. They were involved in the comment writing campaign and how those were being sort of interpreted in the public. And so I think you're right that the economic argument means a lot. I also think that Senator Leahy really, as sort of a, you know, dyed-in-the-wool Vermonter, really fiercely protects the Guard.
One more thing I want to ask you about, Jasper, and that's as you talk to other Vermonters about this, I always wonder how this plays, you know, A, in Chittenden County, in the Burlington area, but then outside of that. I mean, does the rest of the state seem to feel like this is good for Vermont, so Burlington should kind of take one for the team, even if it's going to mean, you know, more increased noise and you know, putting up with a lot of very harsh afterburner sound?
Right, yeah. It's a really fascinating question because I think outside of Chittenden County, there can be a lot of resentment that, you know, some of the major economic initiatives aren't bleeding out to other parts of the state. But, you know, here comes an economic driver, you could argue, that has fairly adverse impacts on quality of life around Chittenden County. So, you know, Burlington is widely considered one of the best places in the country to live. Quality of life is valued there. And, you know, it is sort of a more influential and upper crust sort of vibe out there. And so I think that, you know, sort of anecdotally, there has been some frustration of folks who are wondering why Chittenden County is complaining about this significant economic driver in the county when they're, you know, sort of struggling to retain jobs. I mean, it is odd why the F-35 is coming here to the most densely populated part of the state in some degrees, just because of all the potential adverse health outcomes. But, you know, at the same time, that's where the airport is and where the political influence lies.
Jasper Craven is an investigative reporter for VT Digger. Thank you so much for the time today, Jasper.
My pleasure, Mitch.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Mitch Wertlieb in for Jane Lindholm. We've been speaking this hour about the F-35 fighter jet. It's an upgrade to the F-16s the Vermont Air National Guard has flown for decades. And joining me now on the line is Colonel David Smith, commander of the 158th Fighter Wing of the Vermont Air National Guard. Colonel Smith, thank you so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure, Mitch. Really happy to be here today.
Now, one of the many concerns that opponents of the F-35 have is whether nuclear weapons might be carried here by these jets. We heard this a little bit before. There was reference to it, I think Roseanne Greco mentioned. Now, earlier this year, Colonel Hank Harder, he's the vice wing commander of the 158th Fighter Wing, he told Vermont Edition that would not happen. Is there any scenario you can envision where the F-35s based here could be carrying nuclear weapons?
Mitch, there's not. You know, we've said that the F-35s coming to Burlington do not have a nuclear mission, and there's no plan for them to have one. So, no, there's not a scenario looking at in the future that that we're planning on that, for sure.
As you heard just before, Jasper Craven of VT Digger has been reviewing the use of afterburners by the F-35s at other bases. The rate he calculated was as high as 10 times the original estimates of those being used. Ever since the F-35s arrivals were announced, you know, I've heard Guard officials stress to me and to others that they want to carry out their mission while also being good neighbors for people who live near the airport. So how confident are you that the kind of increased afterburner use that other bases have employed won't be happening here in Vermont?
Yeah, I'm 100% confident, Mitch. The what's important to know is comparing bases to each other is just, it's like apples and oranges. You really can't compare. And we're very confident that the power setting required for takeoff out of Burlington is not using afterburner. It's using what's called military power. And, if you look at, back in the end of May, May 29th, we had four F-35s land here unannounced, and they took off in, not using afterburner. So it's been validated. We validate that in our high fidelity simulator. So we're very confident that we will adhere to the 5% or less afterburner power settings here at Burlington. And just to mention something that was another guest had mentioned.
Sure.
We've never said the F-35 is lighter or that we would take off with a partial fuel load. But if you look at just the airplane, it does not require afterburner to take off out of Burlington, and we do not intend to.
We have this question from James, and this is a little bit dense here, so I want to get through this, but I think you'll be able to explain this to us well. He wants you to discuss U.S. Department of Defense Law of War Principle of Distinction. Now, taking into account that this principle refers to an armed conflict only, it does require commanders to position military forces and military equipment sufficiently far from populated areas so as to avoid injuring civilians. How does the basing of F-35 jets in a city conform to distinction when the Air Force itself has said that nearly 3,000 homes will be made unsuitable for residential use, once these jets arrive and are being used?
Yeah, we've been proud part of the community here for over 70 years now. And, we've flown fighter aircraft for almost that entire time and the F-16 for 33 years. And, one of the unique things, militarily about the Guard is we're part of the community. So it's really important to us that we, manage and mitigate our impact. And, when you look at just the nature of an Air National Guard, flying wing like we are, it doesn't matter what airplane you are. I mean, they're based at, the majority of bases are located at joint use airfields. I mean, you just look across the country, and they're located at municipal airfields. There's very few that are just that standalone military Air National Guard bases, just a handful. So the Air National Guard is part of the community. It's part of the fabric of society. It's where we've been. And when you look at just into the future, I mean, the F-35 is the replacement fighter for Air National Guard units, the legacy or the fourth generation fighter. So what you'll see is you're going to see F-35s at more and more Air National Guard bases across the country. And, I've been in the Air Force in the Guard over 31 years now, right here in Vermont. And, I've been all across the country, and there's very few really rural areas left just with population change. So, the F-35 is going to be at joint use fields. It's going to be in populated areas, and it's going to be operated that way.
Colonel Smith, we have a lot of callers who want to get in. I want to get to those in just a second, and they've been very patient, so I will get to the callers in a moment. But I do want to read to you a couple of comments here. One is pro, one is con, and I think this really – the two of them really kind of summarize the way you kind of have these wildly different views of the Jets. And I'd like to sort of, you know, talk about the contrast here. We got this note from Anya in Burlington who says, in early June, four F-35s landed in Burlington. One flew over my condo in the Old North End. The sound was a penetrating roar, so different in intensity than the F-16s, which also fly over. It felt and sounded like a warplane, she says. I was terrified. I'm a sensitive person, which makes me a good psychotherapist, but vulnerable to warplanes zeroing in on my home. I was shaken and scared for 2 days, she said. If I felt this way as a grown woman, what would happen to a child hearing this? An infant? To pets? How would this affect veterans, those with PTSD? And the contrasting comment we got is from Brian, who says, it's a jet. Jets are loud. Jets protect us. Everyone needs to get on with life just like it was before. Can you see the push and pull between those two? And where do you fall when you hear both those comments?
Yeah, no, I absolutely, Mitch, can appreciate the push and pull between those two. You know, here's what I know. You know, I think it's really important that people read the environmental impact statement and get educated on the impact. There's a lot of information in there. But what I know, the most is I've been around. You know, I flew the F-16 for 25 years here in Vermont, and I've been at bases all around the world. I've been at bases. I've been around every single fighter taking off and landing. And what I can tell you is when I stood out. When the four F-35s that landed on May 29th, when I stood next to them when they were running on the ground, and when I stood right next to the runway when they took off, what I experienced was a sound that is very, very reflective of what the F-16 was for 33 years. And I'm very confident that our community, once the F-35s, I mean, they're here now, so once we start flying them and get to about 10 months from now, sort of a normal, if you will, typical schedule that we flew in the F-16, I think I'm confident that our communities are going to realize that it's basically what the F-16 was for 33 years when it was here. And, you know, we take it really seriously. We continue to look at our operation and how can we minimize and mitigate our impact. And like I said earlier, we live in every single town around the airport here, and it's really important to us. And we have a track record of really professional and safe flying, and we're going to continue to do that. We're going to proudly fly the F-35 like we did the F-16 for 33 years.
Let's take a call from Montreal. Brian is on the line. Hi, Brian. You're on Vermont Edition.
Hi. That's amazing that an international call gets on the line first. I really have only one question. I grew up the son of a man who had top security clearance for the U.S. Navy's most important offensive weapon of the Cold War. My father needed that security clearance absolutely, and so my whole childhood was spent aware of nuclear war from age six. And maybe that makes me think the way I do. I wonder whether this is going to make Burlington first strike target in case of a global problem, because knocking those things out physically is the only way to do it. They're really resistant to electronic countermeasures. You got to blast them to bits. And that being the case, won't that have social effects in every family where people grow up with that consciousness?
Thank you for the call, Brian. Colonel Smith?
Yeah, you know, what I said before is, you know, we do not have the nuclear mission here in Vermont. And also, you know, when you look back to the 33 years of the F-16, I mean, the F-16 was a nuclear-capable airplane. You know, we don't have a nuclear mission here, and we've been here for over 70 years. So, you know, with respect to nuclear and first strike, nothing's changed for us.
Colonel Smith, what do you know about sound mitigation efforts for people who may find, because, you know, one of the things that's been very confusing about this is the sound maps. As I understand it, you know, they keep increasing the zone, the number of homes that are going to be affected by this. Where do people go, and if they want to find out how they can mitigate some of the sound and insulate their homes, and, you know, is that going to come at a cost to them? Is the state picking up? What's happening there?
Yeah, and you know, when you look at the noise compatibility program, that's the Burlington Airport is the steward and runs that program, you know, in conjunction with the FAA. And we work very closely with the airport. You know, we provide, as a user, we provide data, we provide number of operations and basically what our flying schedule is. So, you know, with respect to, sound insulation, that's an airport program or an FAA program. So I know that's been in the news a lot about what that's going to cost to retrofit homes, but That's an FAA program. So there's, I know the airport has forums and passes information, has public meetings. That's the, you know, the FAA and through the noise compatibility Part 150 program. That's where, you know, community members can find out about noise, sound insulation, those
so
kind of things.
So contacting the airport officials chiefly first to find out about that.
Yeah, the airport has been running, you know, they run that program, you know, in conjunction with the FAA. So they're the lead on it. The Air National Guard is not the lead on sound mitigation. The FAA with the airport is.
Okay. Jerry is on the line from Barton. Hi, Jerry. You're on Vermont Edition with Colonel David Smith.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. Well.
Good, Jerry.
Great. Hey, you know, I'm a pilot myself. I'd love to joyride those things, you know, as a pilot. But let me say, first of all, it hasn't been explained to me why, how and why we need those for our defense. It has been explained how those arrived there because of Senator Porkbarrel's political needs.
I think you're referring there to Senator Leahy.
That being said, I don't want to mention his name. The point is, we hear over and over again the mantra, defense, defense, defense. Never have we had to this day a discussion about what our true defense needs are. So I think that the so-called mission, with all due respect to you fellows, is a bunch of malarkey and an incredible waste. Now, speaking to the issue of noise, I was standing on the ground in South Burlington underneath an F-16 taking off. It was like an earthquake, okay? And these things are going to be that much louder. And so, let's not varnish the truth. The truth is that these things are earth-shattering. They're ripping the skies apart for no good need
in
terms of our actions.
Thank you, Jerry. Let's let Colonel Smith answer some of those concerns. Obviously, you know, these are concerns that people have. He's talking about the roar of the F-16. He's also talking about, you know, is this for defense? He seems to say no. What is your view on that?
I understand the concerns from the community. And with respect, is this for defense? What I would encourage people to read is the National Defense Strategy. You can find it online. It's about a 15-page document, and it talks about what the priorities are for this country. And the F-35, as Lieutenant Colonel Graber said, is a very capable and a much-needed technological airplane that this country needs right now to be able to execute our national defense strategy. And it provides access to an environment where fourth-generation or older fighters can't. It's really critical, and it's important that we all know that. But that's a great document that I would encourage our listeners to read. You can find it. It's unclassified, and it frames sort of what our national defense strategy is and how the F-35, it ties right into that.
We got this comment posted from Mark, who says, I have to believe that much of the rest of the state would be happy that the F-35 will result in more noise and inconvenience, et cetera, here in Chittenden County to other areas of the state where they have taken many more economic, social, geographic, and demographic hits. The complaints about F-35 basing at Burlington's airport probably seem like small potatoes. It does make me wonder, Colonel Smith, if this would not have been a better, some place like in Rutland or in the southern Vermont area. Would it be better to be basing it there?
The fact is our base is here, we've been flying here for, we're over 70 years, and this is our base. From an infrastructure perspective, whether it's a Rutland or a Montpelier or a Newport or wherever, there's just not the infrastructure. I mean, our base is here.
I just have one more question for you, Colonel Smith. And, you know, this is the kind of thing where I have heard nothing but really, really good statements from yourself and from other folks who work in the Guard. And repeated to me always that, you know, we're neighbors. We care about this, too. What can you tell us, what can you say to those who are really concerned about this increased noise if the planes get here and they start flying regularly and then for whatever reason you're getting a lot of people saying this is just too crazy loud? I mean, how are you going to be able to respond to that, to those concerns as they happen? It all sounds good now, but what happens when they're finally flying regularly here?
Yeah, no, thanks, Mitch. You know, we'll start for flying the airplanes next week. And, you know, what's important to note is the environmental impact statement that was completed back in 2013, that's a living and breathing document. And if you read that, there's a part of that which is a mitigation and management plan. And, we're, uh, you know, know, as a fighter wing here, as a Vermont Air National Guard, we're held accountable, and we will track our percentage of afterburner use. We'll track our number of operations, and we're required to compare and essentially validate the environmental impact statement. And we take that really seriously, and that's what we intend to do. And that'll be ongoing as soon as we start flying the airplane.
Colonel David Smith with the Vermont Air National Guard, thank you so much for the time today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, Mitch, it was my pleasure.